This is Tyler and Shay. Tyler and Shay.
I know you're going to dig this.
On Chicago's home for sports. ESPN Chicago. Chicago. Always streaming on the ESPN Chicago app.
Check this out.
Good morning and welcome on in. We got a quick sprint here on Tyler and Shay talking a little football and some other things that have gone on throughout the week. If you want to join us, 312-332-3776. Shay, heard something interesting on the Cap and Jay Hood show earlier this week that you so excellently produce. And it was talking about the situations that rookie quarterbacks are being dropped into. And the difference between what the Bears have and what the Vikings have. And Albert Breer was talking about how he believes the Vikings have a better situation for a rookie quarterback to be dropped into than Caleb Williams does. And I thought, like, I heard a little bit of this right before the draft had happened. This was before quarterbacks were even on teams. The Vikings, they didn't know they were going to have J.J. McCarthy at the time. It was pretty set in stone. The Bears were going to have Caleb Williams. But they were talking about the best situations for rookie quarterbacks to be dropped into. And Albert Breer talked about the Vikings being that with the wide receiving core of Justin Jefferson and Jordan Addison. You also throw in T.J. Hockenson, the offensive line, a little bit better than that of the Bears. And for me, I think you throw what Kevin O'Connell brings to the mix as well. I think that's an important part of this entire equation as well. The quarterback to head coach or quarterback to play caller, really, cohesion and sustainability as well for the future. When you look at the formula that a rookie quarterback's being thrown into.
So there's two ways to look at it. Like at first I heard it when Breer said it to Hoodie and I was like, why? What? That came from the clouds. I had no thought ever at any point this offseason that Minnesota was a better place for a rookie than Chicago. And then Breer starts going through it, and I start really thinking about it. I'm like, boy, I do kind of wish that the Bears had Christian Darrisaw, and I do kind of wish that the Bears had Justin Jefferson. And I think it's almost like it's maybe not a fair fight, but you also are grading it on May 25th.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that it will be a better situation in a year than, like, right now, Minnesota probably is the better situation, right? Like, they have Justin Jefferson right now.
Right.
They have Kevin O'Connell in a seemingly very good place right now. They have play caller stability right now, but in a year, Justin Jefferson's already talking about holding out because they won't engage with him in a contract. And this isn't a team that's shied away from trading their superstar receivers. Shout out Randy Moss. Shout out Stephon Diggs.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Justin Jefferson might be third in that vein. So right now it looks better. But I have a lot of questions about the front office. Like, if you want to put up Kwesi Adofo-Mensah against Ryan Poles, I'm taking Ryan Poles every single time. It took Kwesi Adofo-Mensah, I think, three drafts to get somebody who could create a turnover on the defensive side of the ball. Like, it just, he, to me, has not done a great job. Now, this year, I think it kind of fell in his lap. You get J.J. McCarthy, but you had to trade up to do it. And then you get Dallas Turner, but you had to trade up to do it. And I do question a little bit, like, yeah, you got two really good players, and you set yourself up well in the first round. But in the NFL, you just burn mid-round picks to move up one spot for a guy.
Yeah.
It's not the greatest way to do business. So I get what Breer is saying. But the Vikings are going to be bad this year. It's just the way they're built. Like, they're not ready to compete right now. Unless J.J. McCarthy becomes the best quarterback in the draft, which would effectively be the worst day of my life, they're not winning this division. They're not in play. Like, 6-11 is most of the projection that I'm seeing for the Vikings.
Last in the odds to win the division as well.
Bears feel like a team that can flirt with 10 wins, get in that 9-10 range, and make the playoffs. Like, I feel like the situation for the quarterback is not a good way to look at which team is in a better position. Because you can say, well, if Caleb went to the Vikings, he would be in a better position than if he went to the Bears. But he never would have gone to the Vikings because he was the best quarterback in the draft. So I think that context has to be added in, too. Like, the Bears can't exist situationally without Caleb, the same way the Vikings can't exist situationally without J.J. McCarthy. If you're comparing the two situations, you would rather be the Bears. Even if they're marginally worse everywhere else, certainly I think head coaching stability is the one where it's like, this is not even a fair fight. Kevin right. O'Connell's going nowhere. If things go sideways for the Bears, Eberflus is gone. Now, they'd have to go real sideways at this point, but that is there. Like Beer said, the jury's out on Matt Eberflus.
Yeah.
That's the one spot that it doesn't feel like a fair fight. But I would rather have the marginally worse situation with the miles better quarterback than the marginally better situation with the QB5 in the draft.
Here's the other part of the formula that I don't think ever gets talked about enough when evaluating rookie quarterback landing spots. And it's something, there was a big piece on ESPN.com this week about the best historical landing spots. And all you hear about is offense. But I do think defense is important as well. Asking your quarterback to have to go out there and get you 24 to 27 points for your team to have a chance to win is not a sustainable model for a rookie quarterback. I think having a good defense, and the Bears do have the better defense between the Bears and the Vikings, having a good defense and asking your quarterback to say, hey, you know what, we have a chance if you can only get us 14 to 17 points instead of, oh, we need 30 or otherwise we are screwed. And that's something that I think Ryan Poles has done a really good job of building up. He's had a keen focus on the defensive secondary in previous drafts. They may not have been sexy picks at the time.
Yeah.
Specifically, his first draft, where he did not have a first-round pick, and he goes Kyler Gordon, Jaquan Brisker with his first two picks of that draft, a lot of Bears fans were scratching their heads. Both of those picks are looking pretty good right now.
Yep.
And then you follow it up the next year by adding with Tyreek Stevenson. You already had Jalen Johnson as a part of that. You go out and sign Kevin Byard this offseason, and you've just kind of shored up that entire defense, especially with the addition of Montez Sweat, which you made last year. The defense is an important part of building a team and surrounding a rookie quarterback, and it's something that I think is far too overlooked when you're evaluating the situation that you're dropping a young quarterback into.
To that end, though, can I ask you, would you rather have Brian Flores or Matt Eberflus calling your plays? Because that's the one thing, like,
it might be a wash. If anything,
I think it comes down to preference. Like, for me, I would like a guy who's really exotic and will bring pressure from different packages. Like, that's Brian Flores' calling card. He's going to create clever blitzes. He's going to get home.
Eberflus found ways to get turnovers, especially towards the back end of the season, where we saw the team go out and, from a certain stretch of time, a significant portion of the season, led the league in interceptions. And, like, sacks are important, obviously, and turnovers aren't as sustainable year to year. But for him to scheme up and for it to be a calling card of his defenses to be predicated on forcing turnovers and to have extremely talented defensive backs, the turnover is obviously more important than the sack.
Yeah, I agree 100%. It's just the pressure has to be there. And I feel like when I look at the Vikings last year, from a personnel standpoint, they had no business being in the top 10 defenses, and yet they were almost the entire season. There was a stretch, I think, from like week 4 to week 14 where they were the number one defense in football. And it was shocking because personnel-wise, they had no business being there. They had Danielle Hunter. What else?
Yeah.
And Brian Flores was just finding ways, and it was blitz or nothing. Like, that's the one fear is if the blitz doesn't get home, you're giving up a touchdown. But
yeah,
they get home more often than not. I think he's a great play caller. The point I'm trying to make is if you're looking for a place where, like, I think it's not a fair matchup, on the field, I think things are pretty close. Now, I give the edge to Minnesota's offensive line, but not by a ton. I think the Bears' offensive line's pretty good. It's just you don't have Christian Darrisaw.
Yeah.
And center is kind of an iffy position. Wide receiver, I think, yeah, you have Justin Jefferson, but I'd take the three that the Bears have over the three that the Vikings have. And I think Cole Kmet's better than TJ Hockenson. I'll straight up say it. So if you're looking for where it doesn't really fit, it's the head coach and the coaching staff. If I could flip the Vikings coaching staff with the Bears coaching staff, all things being equal, I would. but you can't just do that.
Right. And that's something, it's part of why I think that the Packers have the most sustainable group right now in the NFC North. It's because of the play caller to quarterback situation between Matt LaFleur and Jordan Love. It is the strongest out of anything in the NFC North right now when you put in the talent and the success level that the play callers reached, and albeit a brief stint, but a very good season from Jordan Love last year. We don't know what the future of Shane Waldron is if the Bears have a couple of good seasons. He may be one and done, two and done, if this offense reaches the heights that a lot of Bears fans expect it to. And then the same, I think the same situation bears out in Detroit as well with Jared Goff and Ben Johnson. There is no way Ben Johnson is going through another head coaching cycle without getting a job. I just cannot see it happening three times in a row.
I would be surprised, but at this point, anything could happen. I just, if the Lions are willing to be big boys and pay him the money like it seems like they are, maybe he just will stay as a coordinator and doesn't want the pressure of being head coach. But that, you're right. Like, this goes to why people ask, why do you have to hire an offensive mind to be your head coach? And you don't. There are teams that don't. But if I could have, I would prefer to have my head coach be my play caller when I think I have a franchise quarterback, because then I never have to split them up. It speaks to Green Bay. Matt LaFleur is calling the plays. Matt LaFleur is probably going to be there for a very long time. He's going to call the plays for Jordan Love, and Jordan Love's always going to be in the same kind of offensive system with the same verbiage, with the same cadence, with the same play calls. It's all going to be consistent for him. You're right. Like, if Waldron's good, Waldron's gone.
Especially because Waldron is an older offensive coordinator. I think he's, what, like 44 years old or something like that?
Yeah.
He's a little bit on the older side for some of these hotshot play callers. So that's something where, at a certain point, you got to start looking for a head coaching job.
Yeah, and it's difficult to, like, maintain the consistency. You can try to poach from the same coaching trees, but it's hard to keep everything that consistent for your quarterback, and flipping play callers every few years, that's a difficult life. Like Jalen Hurts, 2 years ago, under Shane Steichen, went to Indianapolis. You go, he looks incredible enough that he got, what, a $265 million contract? He looked amazing, one of the best quarterbacks in football. Last year, with moron coordinators, like Brian Johnson was horrid there, and Philly fans wanted him fired, and the like both coordinators, both sides of the ball, Sirianni did a bad job. And Jalen Hurts looked bad at times last year. And it's like the consistency of keeping the offensive play caller is huge. It's why it's easier to believe in what Kansas City does, because Andy Reid is going to be there calling plays for Patrick Mahomes. Why it's easier to believe in what San Francisco has, because Kyle Shanahan will be there calling plays.
Right.
Even if Miami decides to get a different quarterback, Mike McDaniel's going to be the play caller. Like, that's kind
of the Rams, too, with
Sean McVay. There's so many examples of the consistent teams, the teams that are always there, having the same guy calling the offensive plays. Buffalo is a great example of the other way. Sean McDermott is a good coach. He's good enough to get you to win that division more years than not with the personnel that you have. Great defensive mind. But the offense has been inconsistent. And a part of that was last season, they hired a guy who stunk 2 seasons ago in Dorsey, and they had to fire him. And then they give it to Joe Barry, and things feel like they're, or Joe Brady, things feel like they're unlocking a little bit. And it's like the consistency for a young quarterback like Josh Allen has to be there. And it's why, if I were Buffalo, and I said this to Cap and he thought I was crazy, last year I probably, if things hadn't turned around to the extent that they did, I would have had to think about firing Sean McDermott and getting an offensive mind to be my head coach.
Right.
Just because I need that consistency for the quarterback.
Right, because the quarterback is the guy in Buffalo right now. Josh Allen, there's no questions about, is he a good, like, he is a Super Bowl caliber quarterback. He obviously hasn't won one yet, but he is a quarterback that you can win a Super Bowl with. He is good enough. He is in that echelon. And it's just, it's going to come down to, can you put all the pieces together? And what does the path look like with 15 in red and white on the other side? Because Mahomes is going to be that hurdle in the way for a lot of those super talented quarterbacks. I mean, there's so many good ones in the AFC. And if you had to parse through, like, who's going to win the most over the next 5-7 years. It's tough to pick anyone other than Patrick Mahomes just because he's got the track record. He's got the head coach right now. Who knows how much longer Andy's going to be there? It feels like retirement is one of the buzzword topics every single offseason with him. But when that fracture eventually happens during Patrick Mahomes' career, it's going to come down to what kind of hire does Kansas City make? And that could open the door for the Allens, Burrows, Strouds, Lamars, all those guys yep. to finally be able to break through and maybe get their one while it's got a chance to be got.
When you brought up Stroud, it's going to be really interesting to see what happens there when Bobby Slowik eventually moves on too, because they hired D'Amico Ryans, defensive head coach. Bobby Slowik's going to be a head coaching candidate. You're going to flip the offense over there. What happens to Stroud? It could be a Jalen Hurts kind of situation where you have two seasons of looking incredible, and then you flip your coordinator over. You have a new system you have to learn, and year three's a slump.
Yeah, it's going to be a wild, wild AFC every single year, and it's fun. But you're right. We could see the ebbs and flows because there are a good chunk of defensive coaches within that conference right now. If you want to join us, 312-332-3776. I've got a gripe with Wrigley Field that we did not get to last week, but it flared up again for me this week. We'll discuss when we come back. Thank you to Justin Pottinger for producing today's show. By the way, Justin Pottinger today, playing hurt on the board. Was this back-to-back rec league champions for you?
Yes, sir. Back-to-back.
Thank
you. I appreciate it.
Well done.
Dislocated my finger. It hurt, but we're here. We're here.
You got stuffed, right?
Oh, dude, it was the worst I've ever been blocked in my entire basketball career. Horrible. Horrible.
What happened?
Dude, it was my buddy threw me a hospital pass, meaning, like, just threw it right there. Didn't even need to take a step. It was right there, dude, on my back, blocked me so hard. He probably jumped 40 inch vertical, let out the biggest screech once he blocked me too, and then gave me the quick, yo, are you okay, buddy?
Oh no. The pat on the head.
Dude, he was like, ah, and then he just gave me, yo, you okay? Dude, I didn't want to look down at my hand. I looked down at my hand. My pinky's just in the shape of a Z.
Ugh.
Pulled it right away, heard this loudest click. Checked myself out of the game right away and sat for the rest of game one. Game two came in, taped up my finger, dropped double-digit points, helped us win a championship. So,
but
it was brutal. Like, I didn't know what to do.
Grinder.
Yeah, didn't go to the doctor, just tape and ice.
You're just riding this thing out?
Just riding it out. It was so purple yesterday. Yeah, it was brutal.
Good for you.
All right, thanks, on the road to recovery.
On the road to recovery.
Rec League champ Justin Pottinger on the board for us today. All right, I've had this gripe with Wrigley Field all season long, and it is starting to get to the point where it's out of hand. The lines at the concession stands at Wrigley need to be fixed. Need to be fixed ASAP. I don't know if it's they need more workers there, but Tom Ricketts needs to figure this out.
Wow.
Because it is borderline, like, catastrophe, like code red, like, my seat neighbors, I went to the Braves game, the second game of the series, the game they got blown out. The Cubs got blown out. And my seat neighbors.
I like that phrase, seat neighbors.
Yeah, because like we see them every single game. So they're our seat neighbors, right?
Is this the same people that were there when I was there?
No, because we were it was opening day.
That's right. We were in a different spot.
We were displaced that day. But when we go for the Tigers games, you'll see them there. I have seen them miss one game. I've had these seats. This is my third year in these seats. I've seen them miss one game. It's a father and his daughter. It was an Easter game. That's the only game I've ever seen them miss was on Easter last year. And they missed. They were a little late getting there. The dad drives in from Indiana to every single game. Or not every single game, to 41 home games. Dad drives in from Indiana. Daughter meets him there. And they always bring their own food in, but they were running late, so they went to go get a burger or something from the concession stands. They missed innings 2 through 5 waiting in the concession lines. And it's not like mobile ordering there. Like, mobile ordering used to be the hack where, oh, you just mobile order, you jump the line, and you're good. too many people have gotten privy to that now, and there's so many people in the lines. It's ridiculous. You want to know what else is ridiculous? They used to have all these different stands for to make a Chicago dog. So you got your pickle spear, your sport peppers, your onions, tomatoes, and then obviously all the dressing on it too, all right. The condiments. They have to have taken all but like three of them out. It used to be like every other stand had it. Now it's like two or three in the entire stadium, and the lines to get that, all the fixings on your hot dog, stretch at least three sections.
Jesus.
It has gotten so far out of control at Wrigley Field. What are you doing, Tom Ricketts? These are your fans who come to all these games. You knew the attendance was probably going to be a little bit up this year because your team's better. The attendance is always pretty good year after year anyway because of the fact that you do play at a historic ballpark. You are a historic franchise, and you're not servicing your fans in the right manner. And if you want to get concessions at Wrigley during the game, be prepared to miss about two innings.
That is absurd. I have another complaint that's adjacent to this, that's similar. The grab-and-go stands, you know, where you like walk up, you grab the hot dog, you grab your beer that's like pre-made.
You put them in the little vestibule.
Yeah. It takes like a picture, scans what's there, and then tells you how much you got to pay. That is not efficient when you have to staff somebody to just stand and watch people put their things on the whatever you want to call that, the scanner.
Yeah.
And then you ask for a tip.
I was going to go there because I was waiting the other day. I was like, you know what? I'm just going to try one of these grab and goes. And usually they're pretty, if you know what you're doing, they're good.
They can be efficient. They definitely can.
Because there's one that I waited in on Wednesday that there was a line, but there was also like people, it was like your traditional concession stand too. And there were people like waiting for that, so I'm like, screw this. And I just cut past everyone to go to the grab-and-go portion. And I know what I'm doing at that thing. So it's in and out, no issues. When they ask me for a tip, though, that's when I lose my mind.
Yeah. Yeah, because
you guess what? You have to do it.
Yep.
There's no way out of it. So I tip like a cent. I'm not tipping the robots. I'm sorry. Like, I'm drawing a line in the sand here.
It's ridiculous because I grab the hot dog from the like warming station. Mm-hmm. I grab my beer that's got a dumb lid on it. Mm-hmm. I put it all on the stand.
Been sitting in like a cooler effectively.
Yeah, it's terrible. I put it all on the thing that scans. It tells me how much I have to pay, tap the card, whatever. And then the woman that just stands there to like make sure people are paying for their stuff and not just grabbing and going is like, tip. And I tip. What am I tipping? I just grabbed everything myself and put it on this and then paid myself. You stood here and watched me, and I got a tip?
It's unbelievable. Like, and that's become a thing everywhere. Like, fast food, tip. Like, and where was there was another place I saw recently, too, where it was just an egregious ask for a tip.
Well, I saw a viral post, and I don't know what place it was at, but somebody took the machine, the card reader, where it asks for the tip, and they covered up the no tip option with a sticker that said tip and an arrow towards the percentages.
Oh, my God.
So that you couldn't even press the no tip option.
It's unbelievable. I didn't see that.
Is it genius or is it scum?
Well, that's so scum, but it's genius.
Where was it?
I don't know. It was in an article.
Where could you classify like what kind of place it was?
It looked like a fast food establishment. I'll see if I can find it quickly.
That's a hustler. I respect that. That's something that would piss me off, but I would respect.
Oh, I'd be so angry.
Real quick, let's grab Mark in Highland. What's up, Mark?
Morning, guys.
What's going on?
Just read an article last week that there's a vendor shortage across the country because the vendors can't walk into the stands and charge you and then expect you to tip. So their income, 50 to 60% of it over the years back in the day, and I'm an old guy, you know, they had vendors full because those guys, everybody was tipping. Mm. Nobody takes the time to tip because they're not walking into the stands with that scanner. And I guess it's a national shortage that the vendors have just decided they're not going to work anymore.
Interesting. Oh, thanks for the insight there, Mark. So there's a vendor shortage that's probably impacting all of these. I didn't know about that.
That's terrible.
But glad I know. Shout out to all the vendors that do work out there, because there are some great vendors at Wrigley. I see the same guys in my section. Shout out to my guy, Jonah. He's always there. He's actually like a TikTok vendor. Have you seen this guy?
Mm-mm.
I went to his rival high school. He went to Glenbrook North, but he is on TikTok. I believe he's Jonah the vendor on TikTok, and he like TikToks every single game that he vends, and he does all 81 plus playoffs plus concerts, all that stuff there. He's the best. But yeah, you'll see him walking around, and he's done like all the TikTok, like especially when the hot dog sound was going around, like give us your best hot dog call. Where he thrived. Yeah. That's where he thrived. So shout out to my guy Jonah.
It's a Canadian counter service chicken restaurant, and they covered the no tip option with a tip sticker.
I would not expect that in Canada. I feel like the Canadians would be very privy to tipping.
I know in Europe the tip is not a thing.
It's not a thing.
Yeah,
that's true.
Because they just pay people a living wage. But that's a different conversation.
Yeah. All right, you're off to Indy for the Indy 500.
Hopefully it gets in with the forecast.
Yeah, enjoy. I know my buddies that go to Indy every year for the 500, they always Farmer's Almanac, and they said it's looking like the farmer's going to be right this time, and there is going to be some rain, but sometimes a little bit of rain in the race is a fun one, too.
Well, hopefully it's only a little bit, not the severe thunderstorms that could potentially postpone the race. Yeah. That's the fear.
All right, well, have fun. Enjoy the race. Happy Memorial Day to everyone out there. The CDGA Golf Show is coming up next.
This is Tyler and Shay on Chicago's Home for Sports, ESPN Chicago.